Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
The way you'd react as a wine glass began to slip out of your hand.
The podcast about...
The unknown.
Hello, Jeff. I'm going to be like Jay-Z and do this all in one take. It's from a Jay-Z song.
The show this week is from an old friend of mine. She's a writer living in America's South. Her name is Bridget Burnquist, and what you're about to hear today is a story from Lima, Peru, of how to get mugged, how to grow older, and what it means to be a tourist.
It was my first day in Lima, and I was bored. I'd had a breakfast of fresh ceviche, cold sour fish with bright orange sweet potato, washed down with a 22-ounce cusqueña, drank out of a tiny beer glass, one cupful at a time. I walked the streets along the cliffs of Lima in a lazy solitude, in the bright sunlight, through parks erupting with flowers and statues of dead conquistadors. I wore a little striped mini dress and flip-flops, my long brown hair piled on top of my head. The dress rode up with each step as I walked, wrapped tightly around my thighs, and I tugged at the bottom hem to avoid exposing myself entirely. I knew this about the dress. A little racy for my first day in a strange country, in an unfamiliar culture, but I was feeling obstinate. F*** it, I thought. If you want me, come and get me already, rapists. Here I am. Let's get this over with. I'd come to spend a month in Peru to celebrate my 27th birthday, now only a week off. As the date approached, my certainty grew that I would soon be a scary old woman, the redeeming qualities of youth and beauty obliterated by age. I wondered if acquaintances would remark on how the years have caught up with me, if they will read the years of self-abuse and masochism in my face. I thought it might be etched into my wrinkles like grooves in a record. They won't see a woman, but will look with sympathy at a woman who was once young. I sometimes believed that I'd wear the wrinkles and bags like a scar, something to be proud of, like medals of honor. I hoped it was true. The unpredictability of travel made me feel like it was possible to live forever. So as the panic of another approaching birthday began waking me up at night, I'd bought a plane ticket. The men sitting in the park along the Baja de Baños sit there all day, I imagine. As I walked past, the men began whistling from where they sat in the steep lawn overlooking the street, which ran 500 cobblestone feet straight down to the ocean. They shouted down to me. I watched the pavers under my feet stream by and kept walking. One man in particular began working himself into a frenzy. Like he just couldn't stand it. Like he was watching his favorite football team win in overtime. I couldn't help but turn to look at them, grinning. They waved and shouted, tumbling over one another and laughing. I laughed and waved back. I smiled to myself, reassured as I continued down the street towards the red sand beach. The water was cold, murky, and brown. Big waves hit the sand, and the shore dropped away quickly. I'd bought a new camera for the trip, almost an afterthought. Ordered with next day shipping, so it arrived the day before I left. It was about $100, a Kodak fun saver, and the feature I was most excited about was that it was waterproof. I dove under the surface and took pictures blindly, but the water was murky and the shots came out dark brown. I turned around in the surf and stood facing the shore. I tried to capture the entire sweeping arm of the northern coast. The exuberance of the high-rises teetering on its edge, all shiny glass and bright colors. I tried to capture the loneliness of the desert coast to the south, the brown hills topped with needles of satellite towers, the behemoth white statue of Christ 5 miles away, standing tall, cloaked, and reaching for the sky.
Amiga!
I looked in front of me in the shallow water and saw a crowd of small brown boys, prepubescent, their mouths wide and hands outstretched, pointing at something behind me, terror in their voices as they screamed.
Amiga!
But it was too late. I turned to see what they were pointing at and met a face full of wave, a concrete block of salt water towering higher than my head. It knocked me off my feet and into a violent world of involuntary underwater acrobatics, filling my nose, mouth, throat, and ears with water. I came up, choking and smiling, still facing the cliffs and the boys before them, stumbling to regain my footing. The boys smiled back at me and laughed before their faces dropped and fingers flew up again, and they began screaming over one another.
Amiga!
I turned in time and dove into the oncoming wave, swam under its heaviness. I popped back up and we laughed. This became our game, all of us laughing as they screamed, and we swam together for a while. I took pictures of them as they puffed out their chests and wrapped their arms around each other. Black hair matted and eyelashes dripping salt water into their blinking eyes. They were skinny, the shadow of future six-packs barely noticeable on their flat stomachs. I finally said goodbye, walked back up the beach, and fell asleep with my face in the sand. Back at the hostel that evening, I stared into the mirror and examined the wrinkles blooming across my forehead, poking at the bags beneath my eyes. I ran the water in the sink, pelvis against the counter so that my face was inches from the mirror. I came to Peru to escape my birthday. Time passed with horrifying acceleration lately. But I knew there had been moments in my life where time turned into a sort of Play-Doh. This led me to suspect that it was possible to pack what moments I had left on this earth so full of sensation that they were forced to expand. I turned off the water and walked back to my seat at the bar. The dance floor was empty, but disco lights filled the room, quickly chucking around fistfuls of bright pink and green and blue. The stereo played those tired, generic club classics, house remixes of Bob Marley, Bad Techno, 50 Cent, and Fatboy Slim. I had the impression that any of the clubs within a 5-block radius would do the same, and I was too scared to go any farther than that. It occurred to me that I should socialize, loosen up a little, try to have some fun. Maybe the two men sitting at the bar next to me, silently playing video soccer on the screen above the liquor bottles. Or maybe with the two American girls across the room, no more than 19, drinking and giggling in their tank tops. They wiggled on their bar stools for the benefit of a quiet man with light brown skin wearing skate shoes.
So just give up hope right here and now.
I needed to get out of Lima. I wished I were somewhere weirder. Not somewhere like in that movie The Beach, though. In the movie, a young Leonardo DiCaprio plays a jaded backpacker longing for something truly exotic. He pries a coveted hand-drawn map from the hands of a dead man, which leads him to a beautiful island dystopia full of people with foreign accents. I loved that movie. I watched it over and over in high school, dreaming of escape from my suburban existence. Although now, a decade later, I was realizing my dream of wandering around foreign countries, I can tell you with certainty that when I longed for something truly exotic, the last thing I fantasized about was being trapped on a desert island with a bunch of self-righteous Trustafarians. What a nightmare. What were these Americans doing working this shithole? Did I really once think this was cool? Go get a real job, for fuck's sake. Go get an STD test. Go home and pay your taxes. Get a career. God save me, I was becoming a Republican. The next day, I took a cab to the city center, to the Plaza de Armas. The cab driver dropped me off at the steps of the cathedral. Surrounding a large plaza of black iron fountains and palm trees was sherbet stucco, iron statues, and Spanish architecture. I took pictures of it all, holding the camera up to my face, zigzagging through the square like a drunk. I turned down a crowded alleyway. I wandered into department stores among throngs of beautiful women in stilettos and joined them in picking through mountains of clothes piled higher than my head. I took pictures of display cases loaded full of cakes, rows of slices pressed into saran wrap. I took pictures of mangy street dogs napping in the shade of a big black tank while police officers ate their lunches inside. I walked the streets at random, getting lost among the alleyways until I found myself at the banks of a river. It was wide and low. Brown water trickled between boulders and vultures picked through garbage. Beyond the river were the walls holding up the street on the other side, holding back the iconic slums of Lima. I call them slums because that was what they were called in the caption I'd seen on a National Geographic in a friend's bathroom. They were hills packed tightly with cement houses, each one a different shade of fuchsia or blue, covering the hills like a quilt. I felt like I was seeing Peru for the first time. The flowering parks, expensive coffee shops, fountains, and statues of conquistadors were so cultivated, like sweet ice cream spoon-fed to tourists and rich Peruvians, urging them to kick back with a pisco sour. The thought of it suddenly made me sick. I wanted to go to the slums, to grow up there, to disappear among the painted cement. But it was too late for that now. To go there now, I knew I would be an intruder, a rich camera-wielding tourist on an afternoon outing to the ghetto, taking pictures like she were at the zoo. I felt the burn of eyes staring back at me from the darkened windows across the river, could hear their voices telling me to stay where I belonged. But I didn't want to be scared. I wanted to look the slums in the face and see more than a beautiful picture in National Geographic. I wanted to cross the bridge and bury my hands in the dirt. I told myself arrogant lies to give me courage. At 6 feet tall, I was practically twice the size of the average Peruvian man. They won't want to mess with me. I walk with purpose. I look people in the eyes. People will believe that I'm their equal, even if I didn't believe it myself. They won't wonder to each other what the fuck I'm doing there. They won't stop me and tell me to go back where I came from. They won't be able to read my thoughts. They won't be able to tell I'm a coward. I could feel a difference as soon as I stepped off the bridge on the other side. At the first intersection, a man with tattoos and dreadlocks spun 2-foot-long blades connected with a long chain. He spun it over his head, through his legs, standing in front of the traffic, stopped for the light. He frowned in concentration, sweating and squinting in the afternoon sun. When the light turned green, he disappeared as the herd of slouching taxis and beat-up Corollas enveloped him. I walked down an alley, using the top of the tallest slum-covered hill as the landmark that I navigated towards. I couldn't help but think of the old westerns, how the streets of the frontier town grow empty around noon, just before the outlaw and the sheriff duel. Through empty windows, I could see collapsed roofs. Through small doorways, I saw courtyards crowded with drying laundry. Doorways with dusty bikes parked inside, deserted lawn chairs. A dog trotted past from time to time. I could see the mountainside more clearly now. I could see the dirt, the narrow footpaths left by children or animals scrambling up the scree. I could see into the glassless windows of teetering azul and pastel. I couldn't help pulling out my camera from the pocket of my jacket slung over my arm. I quickly snapped photos. An old woman standing at the crosswalk, a pack of street dogs wandering down an alley. I felt ashamed as I took photos, ashamed that my thoughts were posting them on Facebook, of showing off a souvenir. But I argued with myself, justified. What's the point of venturing into such a beautiful, forbidden place if you can't take a bit of it with you? I emerged from the shadows of the faceless alleyways and saw something beautiful. I had reached the base of the hill. The only way on from here was up. The tall shanties seemed to lean over my head, just above me. In front of me lay a cement slab encompassing 3 or 4 square blocks, fenced in by 15 feet high chain-link fence. Young boys were playing soccer in oversized clothes, running back and forth in the sunshine. It was the playground of a school, surrounded by high walls of corrugated metal. A walkway, a sort of alleyway, separated the cement soccer field and the school building. I crossed the street and entered the narrow alley and found a good spot to watch the boys play. I pulled my camera out from the jacket still slung over my arm and began taking pictures through the chain link. I tried to be quick, not wanting to upset the old women standing nearby, but as the boys ran back and forth, I couldn't stop shooting. It was breathtaking, the image of them playing soccer, the sun shining brilliantly as it sunk towards the ocean, the fluorescent buildings looming just over their shoulders, looking on like chaperones. This would be the shot of the day, I thought. Suddenly, my camera screen went black. I stared at the screen in disbelief, still pointing it at the children. As I understood that my battery was dying, a hand entered my vision. Slowly at first, like someone trying to catch a fly. The hand grabbed the wristband of my camera and pulled. I instinctively tightened my grip, and the band snapped. I saw the hand lunge once more, and it grabbed the body of my camera. I gripped harder. "No," I said. I was quiet, talking to myself automatically, the way you'd react as a wine glass began to slip out of your hand. I turned to face the owner of this hand so that I could lean back against it. I looked into the face in front of me. It was a man, 30-something, much shorter than me. He had a wide face, predominant Incan nose. His face was expressionless, his eyes staring down at the camera, our hands now intertwined. I was perplexed. I thought I must be misunderstanding something. The two of us were so close. I had never been in such close physical proximity, so physically engaged with someone who was a complete stranger. For a moment, I thought maybe we were dancing. Time shattered and then we were wrestling. Sounds exploding from my throat. I turned my back to him, flailed my body, losing grip on the camera and then gaining it again as we pressed our bodies against each other. I thought only of getting people to notice, that if they would just notice, they would help me. If people would just notice, he would get scared and stop. His face stayed the same, still staring at the camera, not breaking a sweat. No emotion while I screamed. And then I came to my senses. All he wanted was the camera. So I let go. I let go, shut my mouth, and spun away from the man I'd been wrestling with. I began walking as fast as I could in silence back up the walkway I'd come down. I never looked back, only stared ahead, clutching my jacket to my chest. The old women watched me walk by with open mouths. My face burned red hot, and I glared past them from behind my disheveled hair. I walked as quickly as I could, dying to get back to the comfort of the department stores and expensive coffee shops. I walked past the little alleyways, past a pair of cops on horseback. I didn't look up, didn't look around, didn't breathe until I'd made it back to the other side of the bridge, back to the busy city center selling jeans and hair extensions, karaoke. I didn't look around until I'd made it back to the steps of the Plaza de Armas. I found a spot nearest a traffic guard, a small woman in a blue-collared shirt and a bright orange crossing guard vest, the only semblance of security I could see. I sat and smoked, looking like a crazy person, I'm sure. I sat there like a wild animal, thinking animal thoughts. I watched a man take my picture with his cell phone in a way that I'm sure seemed discreet to him, and I didn't care. Then I stood up, and walked into the nearest bar, an expensive one with a street-side patio. I felt safe surrounded by a short fence and ordered a tall cuscania. I felt stupid for getting my camera stolen. I felt like a silly, naive tourist. I couldn't even be mad at the guy. Who was I to stroll into their neighborhood with my fancy digital camera? I would just get a new one, only regretting the loss of the pictures. In fact, the thought occurred to me that the whole thing was my fault. If I had just left it alone, just stayed here where I belonged, he never would have had the chance. I had forced him to make a choice, and I thought I might have done the same thing if the tables were turned. I should have just handed him the camera and walked away. I should have brought more and handed them out to the children. As the cold beer put out the fire in my eyes, drowned the fear in my belly, I came back to the pictures. I would really miss the ones of the dogs, the tank, the boys playing soccer. Maybe I should have fought more for them. If he were going to stab me, he would have done it right off the bat. I finished my beer, left a few coins on the table, and stepped back out into the street. I had come to Peru to find adventure. I had imagined myself dancing while the sun rose in the nightclubs of Lima, crawling up the glaciers of the Andes, casting fishing nets in the shallows of the Amazon. But today I'd gotten a glimpse of a darker side of adventure. Adventure exists also in danger and fear, in confronting the unknown, in loneliness and hopelessness itself. It crossed my mind that they were in fact the same, that fear was the essence of adventure. I felt like I'd discovered a shortcut, like an addict, like a cokehead who finally buckles down and smokes crack, and I wanted more. I wanted to feel it again, that concentrated fear and desperation. I wanted to lose everything, to forget who I was and find it again, to have to grasp for it like a blind person. I wanted Peru to strip me entirely, to take control. I had no idea where I would be tomorrow, or in a week, or in two. But I'd looked fear in the face, and I liked it, and that left me with nothing to lose. I thought it would be a long time before I was bored again. I let myself be swept along in the crowded alleyway, into the fading dusky evening, and I couldn't help but smile. I thought about how wonderfully long those moments had seemed, when our hands first touched, when I thought we might be dancing.
Jeff.
I really like the stuff you put together for the show. Like, do you regret going into the slums that day?
No, not at all. I think it really prepared me for the rest of my trip because I had felt so aimless when I first arrived in Lima. Having that experience helped me kind of realize what my true mission was, and that was to kind of get into trouble.
What did you do for the rest of your time there?
I ended up getting on an overnight bus that night to northern Peru, into the Andes, and stayed with a man named Chuki and ran around the mountains for a couple of days and drank Peruvian mountain moonshine and chewed lots of coca leaves with him. And I spent Christmas with him up there.
So what do you mean when you said it prepared you then?
Well, honestly, I think it helped me to put my finger on this desire for really intense situations and excitement and stimulation, and I think that's what drew me to, you know, hang out with a rough crowd in high school. Like, I always kind of explained it away like, oh, I just like, you know, getting wasted. But I realized after this incident that I just need things to happen all the time.
Absolutely. Well, maybe we should tell people a little bit about the music that they heard today.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, heard music from Nim, right?
Mm-hmm. And also Lucky Dragons.
Mm-hmm. And Jose Goncalves.
You know, I don't know how to say that. I'm just going to assume that you got it right. Real old record I found up on archive.org.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And if you're looking for more things monstrous, you should check us out. The show's up on iTunes. We also have a page up on SoundCloud. We have an RSS feed and a lot more. So just look down in the description for that.
Yeah. And stay up with us on Facebook, of course. Facebook.com/HearMeMonstersRadio.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Bridget.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Talk to you soon, okay?
Okay, I'll send this to you right now.
Awesome, thanks.
All right, bye.